Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Well, it's not just Mona today. We have Mona and Rebecca. Hi, ladies.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Well, I know today we're going to be talking about the EB5 backlog and the latest crisis and some of the recent news. So let's dive in. What's going on?
Oh, thanks, Mark. Yes, this is about the EB5 visa backlogs, which is really constituting the latest crisis for EB5, because there's considerable speculation going on about this topic, because there are going to be backlogs and we are facing backlogs for certain countries. And the big news has come from the AILA IIUSA event, which was on last week in Chicago.
That's right. You just got back. How was it?
It was good. It was good to see the two industries merge for this particular event. But it was really overshadowed by Charlie Oppenheim, who brought out the latest figures. And I think that that really had a dampening effect.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Mona, I think that a lot of people have been out there blogging these numbers and putting them up, but they're doing it without actually explaining what does it mean.
Right. That's exactly right. And really, that is one of the reasons we decided we would do a podcast as well as blog piece about that, this situation, because it's not just about the numbers, but we have to explain what the numbers mean. And as well as that, as because we don't want to be negative, also to tell the audience about what the industry is doing, potential remedies, and so on.
Well, Mona, I think first of all, it's important for us to explain to everyone and for them to understand, why are there backlogs? Are there really that many entrepreneurs out there?
Right, because we automatically assume that everybody understands why there are backlogs without really explaining. There are 10,000 visas available for EB5. Now, that sounds like a lot, but it really isn't when you consider that 10,000 visas is for everyone, including all dependents. And we are going to discuss the issues surrounding this shortly. But with regards to the 10,000 visas, we are right now really only talking about 3 or 4 or 5 countries.
Yeah. So Mona, what countries are we talking about?
Well, right now in backlog, we only have China and Vietnam. Potential backlog, not just potential, backlog that we know will happen is going to be India. Backlog that has been discussed has been Vietnam, Brazil, and South Korea, which we'll discuss shortly.
And I think it's important to note, Mona mentioned 10,000 visas earlier, but it's also important that it's 700 visas that are used per country. So every country gets 700 visas. This can be a bit more if we receive unused visas from other categories. So for example, for fiscal year 2018, EB5 ended up having 10,075 visas that were available.
Right. And I think also it's important that we explain that in the short term, by the operation of the per country caps, which I'm not sure if we've actually mentioned, is only 700 per country, even though there are tens of thousands of Chinese investors and family members in the EB5 visa backlog, investors from other countries with less than 700 visa applicants really do not need to wait.
Exactly.
Rebecca, you mentioned unused visas from different visa categories. What happens, though, if a particular country does not use up all their visas?
So within the EB5 category, unused visas will go to those countries that have oversubscribed. So for instance, China, for example, every fiscal year, they use all 700 visas. So whatever is remaining from the other countries will go to China. Basically, they will use all the unused visas at this time because their priority dates are earlier than most of the other countries.
So the priority date is really what's important.
Exactly. And that's the main point. However, though, this has been, 2014, 2015, we've seen China hitting, taking all these visas. But what I thought was curious that Charlie Oppenheim mentioned was in fiscal year 2018, this is the first year that we've seen the rest of the world actually use the visa numbers more than China. So China is not able to use as many visas now. So, and that's why their backlog is a bit longer. Now, the previous year, just to give some numbers, in fiscal year 2017, China used 7,567 visas compared to the rest of the world, which was at 2,523 visas. Now, for fiscal year 2018, China only used 4,624, and that's because the rest of the world used 4,960. So China's visa usage is going down.
Right. And when we are talking about the changes, people do get confused. So we thought we'll start off by explaining this situation. But the whole big consternation which occurred last week was because our good friend Charlie came out with the latest numbers. So, you know, we should really mention who Charlie Oppenheim is, because we keep talking about Charlie, Charlie, Charlie.
As you can see, Charlie is our man.
Well, Charlie Oppenheim is the chief of the Immigrant Visa Control with the U.S. Department of State. So really, he has the fingers on the numbers. What did he say, Rebecca, which is causing such a consternation?
So what he's saying is the number, the backlog, how many years does each country have to wait? What I think is important, though, is what he's given us is for anyone who has filed on or after October 30th of 2018.
Right. Now, which was just last week.
Exactly. It was just last week. But we don't want to scare anyone because, like he said, this is the worst case scenario. And it's not for anyone who's already waiting in line. This is for those who are applying for their I-526 petitions.
Right. And then there are other issues that we will discuss.
So drum roll, we're going to tell you the numbers. So for China, the numbers, if anyone's filing an I-526 petition today, that number for backlog is 14 years.
Right. Vietnam, anybody who's filing today, it's 7.2 years.
For India, I'm hesitant because like we said, we don't want to scare anyone. It is 5.7 years. But I think everyone needs to know is that at this point, India is current and that the final action date for India for us to see a backlog, Charlie is estimating that we will see a date in July 2019.
Okay. And we'll explain more about that in a moment.
Exactly.
The other three countries, South Korea, Rebecca?
2.2 years.
And Taiwan?
1.7.
And Brazil?
1.5 years.
Well, those three countries are under or around 2 years. And bearing in mind it's taking about 2 years for a visa to be adjudicated, that really essentially means there is no backlog at this time for South Korea, Taiwan, or Brazil.
Exactly. And again, for India, there is no backlog at this time. Again, I think a lot of our listeners get confused because they think right now we're in backlog, and it's not the case. Remember, the backlog will hit us. The date will come out next July. And then don't get scared, because even whatever date they put out, they're just using that for the time being until the new visas come in on October of 2019. So India may have a backlog for a few months, but then when October comes, they're going to reopen again with the new visa numbers.
It is so complicated, Rebecca. It was also very interesting that Charlie gave us some slides, and folks, please do go to our blog, because we have put a couple of articles relating to this on our blog. But Charlie did mention the estimated petitions that were on file with the National Visa Center. Now, just to put this in context, when we are talking about estimated petitions on file with the National Visa Center, we are talking about somebody who has an approved I-526 and then has gone to the next stage to either adjust or go through consular processing.
Exactly. And these numbers, right now we're talking about the numbers with the National Visa Center. So those who are applying for consular processing, these numbers are encompassed from since 2014 through 2017. So it's not just 1 year we're talking about. We're talking about all the previous years as well.
Right. But there was a huge increase, upturn in 2015 and 2016.
Yes. And those numbers for China, China is seeing 32,834 petitions with the NVC right now.
Wow. 32,834 petitions for China. In comparison, and this does put things in context, India has pending with the NVC only 509 petitions.
Exactly. And the one that is, I guess, is challenging China, if you want to call it a challenge, is Vietnam, but they're only still at 1,112 petitions.
Right. And Brazil is 260,
yeah,
I believe.
Exactly. And then we have Taiwan with, I think they have the least with 246.
These numbers, Rebecca, do they show the people who are doing adjustment of status?
No. So that's why I think we wanted to bring out that it's very important. That's also important to note that, look, we have investors that are filing not only with the consulate through the consular processing, but we also have those that are in the U.S. and filing for adjustment of status. So these numbers are not including the adjustment of status applications that are pending with USCIS.
And just sorry to interrupt you, Rebecca, but who would file adjustment of status and who would file through the consulate?
So adjustment of status are for those who are legally in status in the United States. So those can be anywhere from students who have student visas to H-1B holders and anyone who also have non-immigrant visas, such as the L and E-2 visas. And those for consular processing, those are those who are outside the U.S., so those who do not have visas to legally enter the U.S. at that point.
Could you do both?
Consular processing and adjustment of status?
Right. Could these numbers be sort of...
It could. You could. Because on the I-526 applications, when you initially file, you have a choice to do consular processing or adjustment of status. And we have a lot of clients who decide to do consular processing, especially if they're in the U.S., because they're not sure if they're going to be in the U.S. once their application gets approved.
Right.
So you could have numbers that are a little skewed because you think that they're pending with the consulate, but at the same time, they're filing their adjustment of status in the U.S. So the numbers could be off. But the numbers with the USCIS are not nearly to those that are pending with the consulate abroad. For instance, as we mentioned earlier, India has 509 applications pending with the consulate. But with USCIS for adjustment of status, there's only 43 applications.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Right.
You know, I talked about a bit being skewed with those filing adjustment and consulate processing, but how accurate do you think these numbers are?
Numbers meaning which numbers are we talking?
The visa
numbers. Mm-hmm. Well, the estimates by even Charlie's estimations were very rough. They can change, of course, because they're not written in stone. And I think that's really important to understand. Those numbers really cannot encompass all the variables. And the variables can include issues such as the dissipation from petition revocations, like deaths, age outs, withdrawals. We forget how many people actually do withdraw and decide that they don't want to pay U.S. taxes and just decide they don't want to go ahead. Nor does it really include increases such as families acquired before the visa issuances, possible legislative, regulatory, judicial, or other governmental action, which might be available to the numbers. But they do give us a glimpse of the issue of the demand, really, versus the annual per country limit. And it's important to have a starting point, and I feel that that's what Charlie has done. He's got the figures which are in front of him right now and given us a rough estimate of, for example, for India, 5.7 years.
Exactly. And so he's also made a few other predictions. So he's made a prediction for, you know, the upcoming month, which would be the next date that could move forward for the final action date would be December.
Whoa, 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 Rebecca. You mentioned final action date, and we always assume that our listeners will understand what a final action date is. And Mark, you don't remember what a final action date is, do you?
Oh, am I on the spot?
Well, you should have listened to our other podcast.
But okay, for the sake of people who really need to understand this and who don't understand this, Rebecca, what is a final action date? And let's go via example. Let's take somebody who has filed their petition. Let's say take somebody from India who has filed their petition January 1st of 2017.
Oh, right. So final action date. Luckily for India, as we are not in backlog, is current at this moment. So there is no actual final action date for India because anyone who's approved at this time can go ahead and file for their visa.
Okay, so if I filed my petition and I'm from India and I filed on January 1st, 2017, and I'm lucky enough to get my petition approved December 1st, 2018, what does that mean?
Again, no final action date because you're current at this time.
So I can get my green card straight away.
After you apply at the consulate, and then once you apply, you will receive your green card. Final action date will hit, as we said, for India next July. So for India, next July would be the important month for you. Final action date right now is we're looking at China and Vietnam. So remember, final action date has to do with your priority date. So if there's a final action date, for instance, December of 2018, it's predicted that China's final action date will be August 22nd of 2014. So anyone who has filed a petition, an I-526 petition, before that date can go ahead and file for their visa.
Okay, so a lot of people have been confused by, I think it was one of the blog posts out there, I think this was one of Bernie's, that India will revert to China's final action date. What does that mean?
So again, we don't want to scare anyone. China, when they mean by China's date that India will go back, it will come in July. There will be a final action date of October 8th, let's say it's October 8th, 2014. But don't get scared, because remember, it's only going to be for a few months. And once October 2019 hits, a new set of visas will come. So India will have another 700 visas to be used, and then we will no longer be in backlog.
So they will have a different date. And that's actually exactly happened with Vietnam, right?
Yes. So we've seen that with Vietnam. When Vietnam first hit backlog, they had the same final action date as China. And then all of a sudden, at the beginning of October, they have moved almost a year past China. And that's because they have more visas available to them. We will see the same for India. And India doesn't even have nearly as many numbers as Vietnam and, of course, China had in the past.
Right. And of course, USCIS are backlogged to about 2 years. But they did say, Sarah Kendall was at the event, and she did say that USCIS is at full capacity and they're adjudicating more 526 petitions than what is being filed.
Yeah, which is good news. it makes, you know, those who are waiting for their I-526 petitions, at least, you know, they'll get something faster adjudications.
Okay. And just because a lot of these blog posts have mentioned chart B and chart A, that's also very confusing for the listener. What does that mean?
So chart A refers to the final action date. So that's what we just discussed, having the final action date. When can you actually have an interview that will allow you to, or when you can actually go for an interview to get the visa to enter the U.S.? Now, chart B stands for dates for filing. Now, those are, again, countries that are in backlog who have final action dates. What happens is Charlie, again, will predict, well, instead of filing your petition, your consular processing petition with the NVC at the final action date, you're actually allowed to file your petition now before that.
So at least that's chart B.
Exactly. And that's chart B. So that means you can gather all your information, pay your fee bill, you can file your DS-260 application and gather all your documents that are needed. And you can file that with the consulate. Then at least you're in queue. And then once your final action date is current, or your priority date is current, then you'll be going in for an interview.
What mental acrobats. Oh my God. So first of all, poor investors have to figure out the whole project process, source of funds, and then they have to work out what all the second stage means.
Yeah, and not to make things more complicated, but I only discuss those who are filing through consular processing. Now for adjustment of status, Chart B wasn't open for a long time. They were allowed those in the U.S. to file dates for filing only in October and November of 2015, and then they closed it again. So those who were filing for adjustment of status could only file when their priority date was current, which was based on the dates for filing. Luckily, they have reopened it, and it looks like it's going to remain open for those who would like to file for adjustment of status if their dates for filing is current.
Well, in other categories like EB2, Rebecca, you can do concurrent filing. And even if you are waiting and waiting and waiting, you get a work authorization and a parole. This is not the case for EB5 yet.
No. So unfortunately, we don't have concurrent filing. So once you file your I-526, you cannot file your I-45.
And there's no way you can actually legally stay in the United States just because you have filed an I-526.
Exactly. And we get that question all the time. Our clients are like, no worries. I filed my I-526 petition. I can stay in the U.S. And we're like, no. You have to have legal status. So you have to have a non-immigrant visa, as we discussed before, to stay in the U.S. But once you have your date for filing is current, then you can file your adjustment of status with the work permit and the parole documents. And then 3 months later, you'll receive that and you're able to stay in the U.S. to legally work.
Right. But you still have to wait till your case is adjudicated. There is a caveat. Regulations, and there has been, you know, legislative drafts have brought in concurrent filing. And we're hoping that we'll get regulation changes next year, which would bring this in. All right, Rebecca, so we've discussed all the visa issues. Now, let's discuss remedies. I'm from India. I want to file my EB-5 petition. What should I do right now? Because everything else is much later. Should I file in an expedited project?
Well, I err in the, you know, be cautious about that. Because really, you have to understand USCIS, even if you're priority date may be current now, it depends on your visa interview. So even if you complete all your documents and you file with USCIS, if we end up going into backlog in July, they will come back to you and say, at this time, we no longer have a visa interview available for you. So you have to work backwards. You have to see, once you file for an expedite case, will I be able to get my interview in time? So that means if you're looking to file by January, February, you may not be able to get your interview in time to receive a visa.
So if you
for
want
this
to,
fiscal year.
Right. So if you want to go into an expedited project as a way of avoiding backlogs and you're from one of these countries, you have to file like now.
If you're like for India, for instance, China, Vietnam, it wouldn't help at this point because they're already in backlog. You have to do it before you get into backlog. Once you're in backlog and you file for an expedite case, you still have to go by your priority date. So that means all the adjudications, your I-526 has to be approved, and then you have to file your DS-260 or your adjustment of status application, which I would say at this point, consular processing is probably faster than adjustment of status at this time, and get your visa interview.
Okay.
Mona, we've heard a lot of, you know, litigation going on. What remedies are out there? What is it that can help all these investors?
Well, there is discussion about litigation because we have a bold claim pending from the master of all, Ira Kuzban himself. Ira's firm have filed a claim before the DC District Court, which basically states that the State Department method of counting the visas is wrong. As we've stated earlier, this whole issue of counting derivatives, 10,000 visas, should be 10,000 investors, not 10,000 visas for everybody, because it just really doesn't make sense. That was not congressional intent. So at this point, we are just waiting for the outcome of this litigation. This litigation was begun by a regional center. I think it was American Lending Center. And it started with about 15 plaintiffs and ended up with about 450 plaintiffs, mostly from China. But the whole point of the litigation is to really pressurize the government to really change the way they count the derivatives. And it's working because there is pressure on the ground. There are lobbying efforts by bodies like IIUSA and other bodies who are looking at alternative relief. And we have, they've approached different congressional members. And I believe there's a fantastic quote which keeps being brought out by Lamar Smith from Texas. He's a Republican, but he actually does state that, quote, "In fact, if these 10,000 investor visas are taken advantage of, it will create a minimum of 100,000 jobs in the United States, and it will generate a revenue of up to $10 billion. Why I quoted that, I take heart in that, is because if any smart person in Congress is listening and they are realizing that additional visas is not additional visas, it's just reshuffling and it just means a lot more income into the United States, they will actually bring this out and hopefully change the way the visa numbers are counted.
Yeah. And I think, like Mona said, it's important because this can generate not only more income to the U.S., but it's generating more jobs. This is legislative history that we're seeing, that these are not meant for derivatives. It's really meant for 10,000 investors.
Yes, it makes logical sense, you know. Otherwise, especially, but it didn't matter so much when we were in countries where there were only single applicants or one child. But you have a case, Rebecca, where there's, what, 8 children?
Yes, exactly. and I mean, it's the U.S. policy as well. You know, you don't want to separate the family. So what's given to the investor should be also given to the dependent without having to include them in all these visa numbers.
So we hope to get Ira back on the show to discuss what's going on with this at some point.
Yeah, I think he said about 60 days. We might hear something from the judge.
Yeah, so that really gives us a lot of hope, because if we can take out the derivatives, countries like India will not be in backlog.
Yeah, and then this podcast would have been outdated.
Yeah.
So we're keeping our fingers crossed for that.
Right. And in addition to the whole derivative argument, the lobbying which is going on is looking at other alternative relief, things like, you know, concurrent filing, looking to recapture unused visas, etc. But we don't have anything definitive from that. We just want to give the investors and the potential investors and people who are listening out there that some hope that, you know, it's not all doom and gloom.
Yeah, exactly. And especially for those who have age out children. That's what we're trying to, you know, help as well.
Age out children. But isn't your age frozen, Rebecca?
No. So that's a whole new category as well. And we've had several podcasts in as well. But once you file an application, your age is frozen at that point. But once your I-526 application is approved, but you're in backlog, it starts to run again.
Oh.
So we have a lot of children who could potentially, who have already aged out. And hopefully, if we're lucky enough to get this case through, then maybe hopefully we can help even those who have lost the visa from the beginning. Let's see if they can recapture from before.
Well, here's hoping.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sure that Ira will be back on the show soon, and we all hope it's with some great news on the 10,000. That would be great if we can use it just for investors and not have their families take up the quota. But, you know, we keep talking, and we've talked about Charlie on this show for a couple of years now. So this is an open invitation to Charlie Oppenheim. If you're listening, we want to interview you here on EB5 Investment Voice. And honestly, I'll go ahead and say this. If you're not Charlie, but you know him and is close to him, tell him he needs to come on and add his voice to EB5 Investment Voice.
We so do want you, Charlie. But also, Mark, Caroline Lee is going to be appearing on the show in future. And Caroline Lee is the founder of the EB5 Visa Relief Group. It's a spinoff from from IIUSA. She really is a person out there looking for ways to lobby Congress to get more visas. So more about that coming up.
That sounds great, Mona. And I want to remind people that EB5 information keeps evolving, right? We've been doing the show for about 3 years now. And yeah, honestly, if you go back 3 years ago, we thought that some changes were going to be happening and things moved around. See, that's the thing with EB5.
That's right.
And honestly, immigration law, right? It keeps changing. It keeps evolving. And honestly, Mona, Rebecca, you two are on the bleeding edge of this information. You find out about it before it's even hinted at if changes could be made. So that's part of the appeal of the show. So for the person listening right now, if this is your first episode, well, welcome. But I also encourage everybody to subscribe. Hit that subscribe button so that when new episodes are available that probably contain new information, you won't miss out on that. So you'll get that on the podcast player of your choice. Mona, Rebecca, I know we don't say that often enough, but we've talked a lot about EB5 information changing and what could happen in the future. So I just wanted to send an invitation to the people listening that haven't subscribed to please do so.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.